Welcome to the I-29 Moo U Dairy Podcast. The I-29 Moo University is a consortium of the land-grant universities located in Minnesota, Iowa, South Dakota, and Nebraska. This podcast covers timely news, information, and research for today's dairy industry. Hi, my name is Jim Sulfur. I'm with the University of Minnesota, and I'm a regional extension educator. I'm joined today by my co-host and colleague, Fred Hall. He's an Iowa State University dairy field specialist. Welcome, Fred.
I always appreciate having a chance to visit with folks who are making and shaking, so to speak.
Yeah. On today's podcast, we're really excited to be joined by Kevin Seward. He's one of the owners of Hyde Park Holsteins. They're located in Zumbro Falls, Minnesota. And the reason we have Kevin on today is this year at our four-state dairy nutrition and management conference. That's in, well, we moved it to La Crosse, but it's down in that area every year. We started recognizing herds with the highest combined fat plus protein. If you're in the dairy industry, you hear a lot of discussion about kind of the 7 pound club, that should be a goal to achieve in your herd, is 7 pounds of combined fat plus protein. And this year, the winner was Hyde Park Holsteins. That's Kevin Seward and their family. And they actually had over eight and a half pounds of combined fat and protein. So a really, really high level. Welcome, Kevin. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your farm and your family?
Well, Hyde Park Holsteins was started in 1943 by my grandfather, and he expanded to about 60 cows in 1970. And then my dad, Kerwin, came home from being a teacher at the University of Illinois, and then he farmed on that site till 1995 when I came home to join the operation, and he still farms today with us. So he takes care of the bookwork and breeding heifers and a lot of the genetic stuff and just taking care of everything that needs to be done. And then we expanded in 1995, we expanded from 60 to 200 cows. And today we are milking 680 cows three times a day. And I also have two of my sons, Justin and Jake, our partners in the dairy. I also have two other boys, Lee, who's a junior at the University of Minnesota, and Blake, who is a senior in high school in Lake City, Minnesota. And Lee is doing an internship in Western Minnesota for a commodity or a grain marketing company. And Blake is interested in judging 4-H, FFA, and is hoping to attend the University of Minnesota next year in animal science and maybe go on to be a vet, is his current plans. The farm, we raise all of our own heifers and we raise all of our own steers. And we farm about 2,000 acres. And that's kind of a general overview of Hyde Park. We have 15 employees. Eric Hansen is the herdsman. He does a phenomenal job. He's been here over 25 years. And then his brothers, Nick, takes care of the crop work. And Dan, our outside operations, and their cousin, Cameron, takes care of the vaccinations, the moving heifers, sorting heifers, and just kind of general overseeing the cows with Eric. And then we have two Hispanic families that take care of most of the milking. So it flows pretty good, but really the key for us is having good people and consistent people all the time.
Where do you get this from, Kevin? That was going to be one of my questions, or not one of my questions, but just as you were talking, as people seem to kind of struggle with employees, it sounds like you've got some long-term employees and some, you know, a lot of them are kind of related. So what do you think is your key to keeping those consistent long-term employees?
I think you have to treat them like family. And hopefully they feel that they're treated that way. But just respect people and don't do anything that you wouldn't want to do. And just do the best you can and treat them the best you can.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And I think one of the keys, as you mentioned it too, is that not having a lot of employee turnover is always good for the consistency of a dairy, right? You're not constantly training people. Fred, do you have any questions or comments as we kind of move forward?
Yeah, I guess how I'd like to kick off my section here is 8.5 pounds of solids doesn't happen by accident. So kind of walk us through the priorities you have to get that kind of production.
I think it starts with good people, and they have to, you know, doing the same job every day, cows like consistency. That means they have to be fed at the same time. They have to be milked at the same time. You know, they have to be treated the same way all the time. And then it goes on to feed. it takes high quality feed, and you can't have room for error. We've been very blessed to work with another dairy from Plainview, Emerald Spring Dairy. They were very instrumental in helping us get high quality feed for many years. It allowed us to be able to have the equipment to make hay and corn silage very quickly and haylage quickly. And so those are, you know, very important factors, is to, you know, have the equipment to get the feed made when it needs to be made.
Can you expand a little bit on that? I know you talked about at the conference what you feed. There's a lot of discussion about low lignin alfalfa, BMR corn silage, what kind of forages you should feed, when you should get it up, how you should store it. Can you expand on kind of your forage program a little bit?
We've never tried to go after BMR. We've always talked about it if we should try it. Instead, we've gone towards high starch corn silage with good digestibility. That's what we look for in corn silage varieties. And it's hard because, you know, once you find one, you'd like to stay with it for many years, and we've been able to do that, but then that variety goes out of production. So then you got to find something else. And then if you have a variety you like, and then it gets hit by tar spot like we had last year, then we have to find something else. So we're really looking for corn silage as varieties that are high in starch with good digestibility. And then on the hay side, since Harvextra's come out, we've always stayed with a low lignin alfalfa, and we go for four cuttings. And what we do is we cut the first one at that pre or bud stage, and then we go 21 to 24 days after that for the next two cuttings. And then the fourth cutting, we wait 6 to 8 weeks, let it get purple, let the roots regenerate so it can go make it through winter. And then we make that for heifer feed. So typically for us, forage crop is never fed that well. We always drop a little bit in production. So we just feed the first three cuttings to the cows, and then forage crop always goes to heifers. For the dry cows, we plant a barley silage or a winterized silage, and then we'll use that to feed the heifers. So then the heifers never get supplemented with protein because the haylage is usually 21 to 24% protein. And so you don't need to buy any extra protein for them. And then we'll just go with it that way. So that's kind of our forage program, and it's, for us, it's worked pretty well.
Complementing good feed, feed that gets milk and gets the components, what about your breeding program? Has that been something you've focused on?
Kerwin selects the bulls, and he's selected bulls since 1970, so that is awfully very important. We always select high net merit bulls that have good udders, and then also just looking at combined fat and protein and pounds of milk. So, you know, right now we'd like to be over 200 pounds of fat and protein, or, you know, upper 180 to 200, and then, you know, as much milk as we can get. We do not breed just specifically type animals. So our cows never do that great at the shows, but we try to get milk out of them.
Yeah, you know, you always have a couple cows at the state fair. No, they look like really, really functional milk cows. And they probably don't stand on the top of the line all the time, but boy, they're a nice set of cows. Good udders and really good feet and legs, I can say.
Yeah, but they don't get the blues at state fair like the kids would like to, but at least they milk.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's really, well, you always win their production award, I think. So that really goes a long ways too.
Very showcasing.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the other thing you talked about a little bit at the conference was kind of this whole cow comfort piece. And I know you really seem to emphasize that during your presentation. Do you want to expand a little bit on some of the things you do to try and maximize cow comfort and how you manage that in your herd?
When we built the barn in 1995, we went with mattresses that had ground up car tires. There was 300 pounds of car tires ground up underneath a canvas mattress. And then we bedded the stalls with oat hulls or sawdust or whatever we could use at the time because we had a gravity flow manure system. And it worked really good. But in 2009, we were kind of sitting at 85, 90 pounds of milk, and that's kind of all we could get. And we had swollen front knees and swollen hocks and, you know, more lameness than you like or injuries. So we decided to make the change to sand. So we tore the mattresses out, tore the rubber out, dug the stalls out, and then we found out that we had a foot of concrete for a curb. Well, that wasn't going to work with sand. So then we took a cement saw, and Nick was very instrumental in this. And Nick Hansen was very instrumental in helping us remodel the barn. And we cut the concrete down to a 6-inch wide curb and beat the rest of the concrete out with a maul, and then filled the stalls with sand and then put in a sand separation lane. And then we were able to see more milk after we did that. And cows got more comfortable and no more injuries on the rear legs and knees.
What year did you do that again, Kevin?
2009.
That sounds like a big project. Who did all that? Boy, I don't want to arm wrestle the guy who did that. I mean, that's got to be unbelievable. That's a lot of work to convert those stalls over.
We had a little mini excavator to dig out the dirt and the clay, and Nick and I did it, and then we had the other guys help too. But yeah, it was a lot of work.
Yeah. So but you would argue it's worth it, I would suspect.
Well, at the time you wonder, but yeah, the results were obviously very good.
Yeah, go ahead.
So you increased production. What about cell count? Did you notice a difference there?
Not really at the time, no, but we are always a high cell count herd. We'd run 500,000 for many years. I mean, that's kind of where we always ran. And then we lost BST, and then cell count started to come down. We were in the 200s, and now we're under 100,000. It's kind of hard to believe, actually, on cell count. But yeah, typically we're under 100,000 now, or 180 to 110, probably.
Did you change anything? I mean, that's a pretty dramatic drop from 300 to 100. Is there anything you can put your finger on that helped lower that somatic cell count?
You know, that's a hard one. We had stray voltage at one time. We had cows would leave we'd lift the gangs up in the parlor, and the cows would walk out and fall over dead. And so we did some things with stray voltage, and that's probably the biggest change or biggest thing to fix the cell count. But then just in time when culling cows and stuff, we were able to bring the cell count down.
So one thing you haven't touched on, Kevin, is kind of your repro program. It seems like getting cows pregnant really important for high production to keep them milking. What is your repro program for consistently getting cows pregnant?
So we use DeLaval's activity collars and pedometers. And so we kind of watch them, and then we wait until 55 days is our voluntary waiting period. And anything after 55 days to 75 days, we'll get bred off activity. And then at 75 days, they go into a double obsync program. And Eric Hansen takes care of all the repro stuff. So, and he's very good. So that's what we do. And he's running about a 30 to 35% preg rate.
Breeding everything to sex semen or traditional semen or beef semen, or what's your role there?
Everything gets bred conventional. Once in a while, we use some sex, and I think we've probably used 10 units of beef semen in the last year and a half, just on cows that are really hard to get bred if we want to keep them. Not too much. The reason we haven't gone on the beef semen is because it's nice to be able to cull cows, and it's hard to know, you know, sometimes even if they look good on paper, they'll still really milk well. And so how do you pick who are you going to breed the beef, who are you going to breed the sexed? And, you know, we kind of like to give everybody a chance, and if they don't make it, then we can cull them.
What do you do with your bull calves, and do you feed them out yourselves, or do they go sold someplace else?
So I live 6 miles from the dairy. And we have a steer finishing facility there. So they come into here at about 400 pounds, and then they sell them out at 1,500 to 1,600.
So you basically run them with your heifers, tell her that 400 pounds, you treat them all the same, and then they kind of assume they go on some kind of finishing diet or a higher energy diet when they get over to your place?
No. They're raised in individual hutches, and when they're weaned, the steers go one way and the heifers go the other way. And so, no, they're fed separate the whole way through.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's probably been a pretty good market the last few years, huh? Holsteins, I mean, any kind of steers, any kind of beef has been a good.
Yeah, it's nice to be a little diversified. So when milk's not so good, you got some extra income from something else.
Yeah. You know, you must have kind of extra heifers then. If you kind of use all conventional semen, I assume you get about 50% heifers. How do you manage that inventory of either the excess heifers? Do you sell cows? Do you sell springers? Do you just freshen them all and cull cows? How do you manage kind of, I'll call it, your excess heifer inventory?
So we freshen everything, and then not everything makes it. So then, you know, sometimes the heifers are all raised on free stalls. And so if something has a bad leg, well, we can freshen her, get the calf and sell her. We can freshen them, see how they're doing. And then, you know, there's a market for fresh heifers that are milking. So then we've been able to market some fresh cows that way. But we want to make sure that they're up and going good. You know, if we can sell 2-year-olds that are milking between 90 and 100 pounds, that's, you know, we kind of try to look for something like that. And there's a market for them. So we've been selling some heifers that way.
Have you found that to be a pretty good market? Because I have more farms I work with that seem interested in not really raising replacements. They don't have good facilities, or they just don't have anybody that wants to raise cows. So they are calves. So they just want to raise these wet cows and really are trending toward basically using all beef semen and then buying wet cows as replacements. Has that market gotten better for you? Has that kind of stayed the same? And do you have any? I mean, do you sell them at sales barns as a group? Do you try to sell them privately? What do you do with those kind of excess heifers?
So in 2015, we built a freestall facility for the heifers. And what it is it's basically a roof with freestalls, and then they go outside and eat along outside feed bunk. So they're able to get outside and they can get some exercise. But it's been a learning curve because we thought we had a nice facility for heifers, and then they got corkscrewed on their feet. So it's taken quite a few years to get through all that. And now we figured out why they got corkscrews, and so we built another heifer facility so they don't go into the freestalls as soon. And so now we're really kind of just starting to get into the excess heifer issue. So it gives us an option if we want to expand. We have the heifers we could expand. It gives us the market when we try to sell them. I really try to sell them privately. So anybody that listens to this podcast and is interested in heifers to call me, or fresh cows, it's not heifers. We don't sell springers because I don't want to sell something to somebody that isn't going to do well. And so that's why we've kind of freshened them for ourselves. And part of that reason is then I get the calf and then I can keep going. You know, I'll have more animals in the future if I get the calf. So whether it's a steer or heifer, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, we just keep looking for in private treaty. But if we have to, we'll sell them through a sales barn. But our best luck is just going direct.
Yeah, and I think that's a good option for people. As I visit with them, I said, you know, you're probably going to pay a premium buying those red heifers, but you're also going to know they have 4 good quarters, a clean uterus, and 4 good feet and legs. And you're, as the person calving them, you're really taking all the risk. I mean, the risk is right around calving time. And so once they get off to a good start, so I think for a lot of farms, that's a really good option because that's a high labor period is right around calving and getting them up and going.
I say if we can get them milking, you know, between 90 and 100, and they can buy them, and then they can breed them the way they want them. If they want them to bred to beef, or they want to breed them to Holstein or conventional or sexed, then they have the option to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. We've covered quite a few topics here as we start to wind down. Maybe give us a couple of pointers for people that are listening who maybe they're not quite at 7 and they want to move up to that 8 pound level and keep their herd healthy. What are a couple of things that you think they have to concentrate on?
Well, take care of your people. That's the biggest one. Make sure if the people are do well, the cows will do well is kind of what I think. The other thing is make sure you have good, consistent feed quality, highly digestible feed, and cow comfort. Those three things: people, feed, and cow comfort. The rest will kind of take care of itself.
Yeah, it's always interesting. I hear other high producing, I work with other high producing herds, and it's always kind of the same. If you go to herds that aren't high producing, a lot of times they'll want to know what kind of the magic ingredient is. And I think I just hear this message so consistently that take care of your people, take care of your really good quality feed, get your cows bred. There's nothing really magical in doing that other than doing it every single day. That it, you know, it's one of those things. It's really not, it's not complicated, but it's hard. It is really hard to do those things consistently all the time.
I think that's the thing we hear most often is it's got to be consistent. Cows respond to that, even if it isn't perfect, if it's the same every time. And I think when it's hay season, when it's time to cut corn, you know, people try to cut a corner here and there, and cows don't like that.
Oh, that's right. So you got any last comments, Fred?
No, I think we covered some really interesting topics, and I appreciate the opportunity to have this visit today.
Yeah, thanks, Fred, and thanks for all the listeners. Kevin, I really do appreciate you coming on and doing this and sharing at least what you're doing on your farm, on what's helped you achieve. I mean, they've been, and this isn't a one-hit wonder for these guys. They've been the top herd, I think, top dollar herd in Minnesota, so for well over 10 years now. And so this is, I think, a good example of a farm that just does things consistently pretty much every day and shows what can really happen if you do that consistency. So, Kevin, again, thank you for joining us. And you have any last-minute comments?
Nope, just thank you for inviting me on.
Well, thanks, everybody. Have a nice day. We'd like to thank our annual sponsors, including our gold sponsor, Iowa Corn Growers Association. Please visit their website at iowacorn.org. We'd also like to thank our silver sponsors, Pioneer, Connor Agriservice, Diamond V, and Central Vet Clinic. I-29 Moo University is an equal opportunity educator. For the full discrimination statement, visit extension.iastate.edu/diversity/ext.